One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
The Queer Family Podcast.
How did you do it? You did it at home? Did you go to a clinic?
At home. He came over, did his thing into a Ziploc bag, and then
that's
a,
new.
A new Ziploc.
That's new though. The first, the Ziploc. Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your lesbian host. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families and all of our beautiful identities. And this episode does not disappoint on that front. And they never do. Let's be real. I got to sit down and talk to Lamia. Lamia is a beautiful, wonderful soul inside and out. And what struck me most about this conversation is how queer it is. We go queer here. Lamia is genderqueer. Lamia is a parent to three. We go into known donor situations. We go into the non-bio connection here and there. We talk chosen family. Like, you can't get more queer than this here episode, and it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful testament to just how we queer folks really can thrive and make this world a better place. That's what I'm going to say there. I really loved Lamia, and I think you're going to love this conversation, and I want to get to rolling that tape. But before I do, we are officially in December, and what happens in the Kelwoods household here right before Thanksgiving is crazy town. We go into crazy town because right before Thanksgiving, we have my son's birthday. Then we have Thanksgiving. Then we have my birthday. Then right on the heels of my birthday, we have my daughter's birthday. Then we have Christmas. Then we have New Year's. And then we have shortly thereafter my wife's birthday. So we are officially in crazy time. And every year is just as crazy as before, except for one thing. What I'm noticing now, and this is not a fair thing, is now that I have an almost 11-year-old, the birthday gifts are getting a little more expensive / Christmas gifts, which are only 1 week apart, mind you. They're getting more expensive, and that is not fair. This child is asking for some stuff that I am like, are you kidding? I don't even buy that for myself. Are you kidding me? Parenting is hard, y'all. Parenting is hard. But so if you see me frantically walking down the New York City streets, ducking in and out of stores, looking mad and crazy, just know it's because the Kelwoods have entered crazy town. We're in crazy town right now. And it won't end until until this birthday / holiday season is over for us. And then the rest of the year, smooth sailing. Anyway, I hope y'all are enjoying your December. I hope you have some wonderful plans coming up for your holiday celebrations. I hope you are surrounded by loved ones. I hope you are surrounded by chosen family. I hope you are surrounded by folks who affirm you. And I hope you know that you are loved. And I just hope life is going great for all of you. So let's hear Lamia's uplifting story because it's a good one and it's super, super queer, y'all. All right, Helen really did give up drinking for December and she's doing great. She's looking great. She's feeling great. She helped me get the kids ready for school the other morning. I couldn't believe it. She was up bright-eyed and early. Helen is really pulling through right now. It's really awesome. She's helping us, the Kelwoods, with our crazy town. Helen is not real, y'all. I don't have an assistant. I don't have two assistants. I ain't got nobody. But it's fun to make up these fun stories about Helen. Anyway, so Helen's sober and she's helping out a lot. Anyway, Helen, Beulah, Jerson, please roll that tape. Enjoy, y'all. Enjoy.
Queer Family Podcast, Love is Love.
Hi, Lamia.
Hi, Jamie.
It is wonderful to have you here in the studio. How are you today?
I'm good. Yeah, so excited to be here.
Okay, let's just get right into, so the audience at home knows who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. Let's do your 30-second elevator pitch. Okay, on your mark. Get set. Go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lamia Gibson, and I am a parent to two kids and kind of three because I'll tell you about that later. I practice acupuncture. I'm a meditator. I have queered the queer family. I have two kids with two different people, and I'm currently single. And I'd love to talk about how I show up in the world as a parent, as a queer and trans parent. I'm even, you know, uniquely trans in that I am gender fluid. I believe we have a lot to offer our children and all children, really, by being who we are.
Boom. I agree. You went slightly over, but I will not count it against you because I love that last sentence because I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. I think that we bring a lot to the parenting table, to be quite honest, as queer folks, and especially as folks who have had to kind of fight our way to be who we want to be, right? And some feels like more so than others. Lamia, I do want to dive in real quickly because this is crazy in over almost 300 episodes. I think you are the first guest I've had who uses Z, Zem pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just dig into that a little bit? I'm familiar with it, but the audience at home might not. And I would love to just dive in and make sure we all know what Z, Zem represents and all the things.
So about 15 years ago, I heard the pronouns Z here. And I was like, huh, that's me. At the time I was using she, her pronouns. I was like, I'm not ready for that. I don't think the world's ready for that. A friend of mine was using they, them pronouns like 25 years ago or something, which was kind of groundbreaking back then.
Yeah.
And I was like, they use they, them. Maybe I'll do that one day. I like very slowly came out of the closet as gender different, gender creative, gender fabulous. These are all different words I use.
I like that. Gender fabulous.
In fact, actually, there's a real connection here. So being a parent, I mentioned in my 30-second elevator pitch that I kind of had a half kid, which is the situation was I lived with my friend, also queer. We weren't together, but we lived together with her young son until he was 5. And he used to call me mom. He's still in my life now. He's 22. So I call him my love child. And when he was little and in daycare, he came home one day and he was like, Lamia, you're a boy girl. And I was like, huh. And I knew this about myself, but there was something in the validation that he experienced. And he was in like, he was 4 and was very heavily being kind of indoctrinated with the boy girl thing.
Yeah. That's what happens in school.
Yeah. And then when I was pregnant with my oldest kid of the two that I live with and currently parent, it was really, really important to me to be who I am. And I was like, oh, if I want this baby, whoever they are, to be who they are, I best be being who I am. So that's when I started using they, them pronouns when I was pregnant. And in the last couple of years, I've been in a leadership program and I felt I wanted to test out Z-Zem in that environment. So I did that. And then literally, I think it's like 3-4 weeks ago, I made it public that I just use Z-Zem now. I'm an acupuncturist and slowly clients will get there. I find myself a unique trans person in that I think it's because I'm gender fluid, fabulous, creative, that you can't misgender me. So when people say she or he or sir or ma'am or whatever they say, like, yeah, it all fits. And I really rather that people know me as Lamia, like the person, mm-hmm. before they know the pronoun. And at the same time, I recognize that for a lot of people, pronouns are incredibly important. They're very deeply connected to mental health and our sense of self.
Yeah.
And all that can be true. But in all honesty, I was like, yeah, ZZM, that really fits me. It fits the fluidity with where I exist. I'm going to get top surgery in a few months. And now I'm like, oh, I got to go buy more nail polish and get makeup on again, because otherwise this is just going to not fit anymore.
That's amazing. I love yeah. that. Okay. I like ZZM. I love it. Thank you for mm-hmm. that explanation. I appreciate yeah. it.
Yeah, and I think it. I want to say too, I think it goes for the she, hers, and the he, hims also, whether we're cis, trans, or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. those things are important. Gender's a construct. We might not yes. consciously construct it. You know, the majority might not consciously construct it, but it is important. And I found that in these pronouns. I was like, oh, this really is me. ZZM. All right. Let's do
Feel
it.
Feel right. Mm-hmm. Feels right. Let's take it back. Let's take it to before kids. I guess kind of just finding yourself. Can we go back and take it to younger Lamia and how we got to where we're at, kind of?
Yeah. Like, I knew I was some kind of different when I was about 11. I had, like, started getting crushes on boys maybe early, around 9, 10 years old. When I was 11, I was having a sleepover with a friend who was a girl. And we were about to go to bed, and my body was like, desire. And I was like, uh-oh, what's this? I didn't have that word then. I was 11, you know? And then I knew, I was like, oh, that's not supposed to happen. Like, there's something off about that. There must be. And then I just kind of pushed it away for a while. And then in high school, I had a friend who came out to me, and he's he now, came out to me as queer, and I was one of the people he was most afraid of to tell. And I was like now I'm like, oh, that's so fascinating. But we were besties. And he came downtown and I started hanging out with him. And I was like, oh, this is what that is. Okay. And then I came out as bisexual when I was 17. And I told my mom. She was surprisingly not super supportive at first. It took her a year or two. She was really afraid for me. She was afraid. Huh. And she had really supported and like told me stories about supporting. She was a nurse. And so she supported her friends who were male nurses who were gay, one in particular, and supported him and advocated with him and blah, blah, blah. So when I came out to her, I was like, she's going to be fine. I'm nervous to tell her, but it'll be fine. And then it was not fine. And I was like, ooh.
Similar kind of to me, sort of. Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco. I was like, oh, they're going to take this in stride, you know, but I was still scared as hell. And I started out bisexual and my mother was not feeling like, I'm sorry, what? You know, it's very interesting, but she didn't take as long. It took like a day. So.
Okay. Yeah. And my mom wasn't awful to me. She was British and she was just like she just took her a while. Now I understand it, that she was scared. We've talked about it. We had talked about it since. But she was scared. She became a huge supporter of me over the years. One time she turned to me. We were talking. I can't remember what about. But she looked at me and she was like, you just all take care of each other so well. I've just never seen friendships like this where you care about each other and like look after each other. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how the gays do it.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
That's what we kind of have to.
You know? Right? Have to and learn how to and create community and create families, you know, pre-having children, create chosen families. Because it does hurt. It hurts to not be accepted. But it also, I understand it. We're in such a bigger global generational experience. And I don't expect people to get it anymore. And I think And not that I don't expect people to get it, but I certainly don't expect them to get it right away if they've never heard of things, you know, like if it's a totally new piece of information, don't hate on us, you know, don't be horrible to us, but like, okay, you don't get it. Let's talk.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, here, let me give you some things to read and some things to listen to, and then let's talk.
Yeah.
So came out as bi and then things changed. So where do we go from there?
I think when I was about early 20s, a lot of my friends were coming out as trans and I was like playing around with it. Like I was starting to wear, I was very high femme for a very long time and I very much loved it. Like I was high heels, makeup, hair, get it. Like I loved it. I was femme butch dynamics. It was awesome.
That's
I was like
fun.
Boobs and
that's
heels.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great for many years. And that's still part of me. Like, that's where, you know, I'm going to get top surgery and I have to get nail polish again and some makeup. Like, that's just part of my soul. I was 33 when I had my oldest. But before that, I would say my early to mid 20s, I started to, like, you know, put one foot in, take one foot out. I do the hokey pokey with gender. I was like, is this me? And then my other part of my experience is I've lived in a bigger body for most of my life. It took about 10 years to tease apart internally, is this internalized fat phobia or am I trans? Like, because when I would close my eyes and be like, what body do I imagine myself? It would be this very muscly man, thin, kind of like, you know, just no fat, really muscly man. And it took a long time, but there was a day where I was like, oh, I bet fat women, when they're dealing with internalized fat phobia, aren't imagining a man's body. They're probably imagining a woman's body.
Isn't it funny, though, where your mind mechanics have to go in order to get to the realization that you finally get to?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're alone in that. You know, like, there's a moment where we think, oh, we all think that way. Everybody's thinking, having that same thought in their head. And then there's the realization moment where it's like, oh, actually, I don't think my best friend feels that way.
Yeah, that might just be me. And I think it's the gender fluidity that I have now embraced that also didn't fit. Because I was like, but if I transition to the other side, I'm still going to have the same problem. And I use air quotes there because it's not a problem and there's no side really. But yeah, I was just like, what is this? What is this? What is this? And honestly, that moment when my love child was like, you're a boy girl. And also as the non-binary wave happened, maybe that's for the last 10 years or so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, thank you, youth. And I don't really identify as non-binary, but I was like, that's something. Okay. I'm getting out of my own box, my own conditioning, my own, you have to be. And I had other trans friends, like F to M trans folks, who really didn't get me. And my experience seemed to threaten them.
Right.
They would say things like, you know, when are you going to transition? Like, why aren't, you know, and I'd be like, oh, this is not supportive.
It has to be one or the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if, for them, it was. And that was their truth. And that's great.
Exactly. For some it is, and for some it isn't. And exactly, this is the whole spectrum that we all need to be more aware of.
And I do think there's like a masculinity and a femininity to everybody, but I also 100% know that some men are men, and they might be trans men or cis men, but some women are women. And like, that's fab. That's great. And there's also like, I'm not undecided. I'm just, honestly, I like root more to being a spirit in a human form. And that's just how I am.
Mm-hmm. It seems have come to a place where you're comfortable in the skin you're in, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause are we ever really comfortable in the skin we're in? I don't know. It's an ongoing process. And it seems like you switch it up. Like, some days you're more feminine. Some days you're more masculine. And there's a fluidity to it, the gender fluid thing.
And I've let go of the external, not like we don't need validation or I don't need validation, but I've let go of needing, like, I know who I am. And a lot of people think they know who I am and they're making assumptions, and that's okay.
Right.
And if someone wants to get to know me, it's my work to be known. Like, a lot of people look at my face and go, sir, you know, he, la, la, la. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea I was going to get such a major beard when I went on testosterone. It's my Turkish blood shining through.
You're getting like the gears in my own mind working. And I'm imagining you're getting the gears in listeners' minds working as well, just about gender and the construct of gender and where we all kind of fit in. And I love these conversations because for me, it helps me to go deeper in my own gender story, so to speak. If that makes any sense.
Like, my experience has included letting go of a certainty to feel certain. Like, in the experience of like, well, if I transition, I'm just going to be in the same situation, you know, and then I'll be living as a man, but that still won't be me. and having like kind of the embodiment of like, oh, I'm mixed. And I'm also mixed race. I'm like, I'm mixed race and mixed gender. I'm working on being mixed class because I grew up working class, but I'm going to make more money.
We're going to do that. We're going there. We're going yeah, there. Totally. You and me both.
Yeah, right on. Grappling, accepting of who I am and not seeing much of myself in the world. Mm. I mean, that was really affirming when the youth were like non-binary and I was like, damn, okay, yeah. That really, really helped me see myself. And I've now not let go of all external validation, but if I had to rely on what other people perceived of me to be me, I'd be screwed.
Oh, yeah.
People just think I'm a man. Or if I'm on the phone, they think I'm a woman, which is cute.
These conversations are really important. Representation matters, as you're just illustrating and telling right now, right here, right now. Thank you, youth. Yes, keep going. Mm-hmm. And also, I think we all should explore the idea of gender within ourselves. I think we all should. I think that should just be like a prerequisite to being human.
I mean, maybe if you want to, right? Some people, like one of my ex-boyfriends who's trans, when we were dating, I call it my Angelina Jolie Brad Pitt relationship because he is so handsome and I was so pretty with like long brown hair. And we broke up in part because I was a bit too queer. Like, you know, I kind of outed him because I was so queer.
Oh, right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And years later, and if you're out there, friend, I'm like, oh, if he ever watches this, he'll know who
Brad.
He is. Yeah, Brad. If you're out there, Brad. But years later, he came to me and because we remained friends because gay, you know?
Yeah. Queers. Yeah, exactly. Because gay. Because
queers. Well, he's not gay. He's straight, but queers.
Right. Right. Queers.
And he came to me years later and he was like, you know, Lamya, I really had to know a person who was a non-fixed gender in order to get it. And thanks for just, you know, sharing your life with me and like telling me about who you are. Because I was really judgmental. And I think he said he was threatened. I can't totally remember. I might be putting that on him. But he was really uncomfortable with it. And it was such a beautiful conversation. I was like, yeah, I'll call him Brad. Yeah, Brad.
Yeah, Brad.
It's okay. We're here.
That's a little bit of what I was trying to get at. But you just said it so much more beautifully. It helps us understand better. I don't know. Talking about gender with somebody like you, who has really explored inside your own self what gender means to you, helps me to understand your experience, obviously, and also just what it kind of means to me and the world around me, I suppose. And I think we all need to know a trans person or two or five or 10 or 20.
But you can know a trans person and not ever take interest.
That would be weird. That's
like,
crazy.
It's not a guarantee.
I mean, that would be silly.
It's like being like, I have a trans best friend. It's like, cool. Yeah. But do you know them? You know, like, do we actually relate to each other? It really did take me wanting to be known and taking responsibility for that, which like even propelled the ZZM switch.
The responsibility, though, that I'm sure can be exhausting. It's just like me having to explain to my doctor, nope, not pregnant, gay. Nope, having gay sex, definitely not pregnant.
Yeah.
Right? Like over and over again. It's exhausting to me. I get tired of it. I don't really, you know, want to have to do that all
the
time.
You want the world to be like, maybe this person's gay.
Right. Yeah. I don't want heterosexual, heteronormative to be the assumption. Mm-hmm. Right.
Back in 2019, I took this course called Radical Relating that really changed my life. And it taught me how to relate across difference. And ever since, I've been like, oh, learning how to relate across difference meant that when I got on the streetcar here and the dudes would give me cut eye because I have a fairly big chest. So especially in the summer, and this is 5 years ago when I wasn't quite so hairy, but I definitely was more masculine. And the dudes on the streetcar who would give me hate eyes and cut eye, like, I then could look at them without, I could understand that interaction as, oh, that's the difference you have about me. That doesn't do anything to me. I can check myself and be like, am I safe?
Because, right.
You
right.
know?
Yes.
Or like a female-bodied, an AFAB person, assigned female at birth person, who is looking more masculine, definitely can threaten some cis men's masculinity And because their understanding of me is that I'm a woman mm-hmm. trying to get what they've got, they could be very harmful and violent to me.
Very.
I'm aware.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I can check for my safety, but that's the part where I teased out. I was like, oh yeah, this is, I am who I am. I'm a person. Like, it's not like hate eyes. Sometimes when I'm at a swimming pool and like coming around to kids, when I'm in a swimming pool, especially if I'm a swimming pool with my kids and like there's other dads, usually dads who are staring at me, I'll wear a sports bra and shorts mm-hmm. to go swimming, as I've had my boobs and my beard for the last 5 years-ish. There is moments in the pool where I'm getting stared at and I just, sometimes I'm like, and this is, I am this way because I'm this way. It's not that I think anybody else should be how I am. Mm-hmm. Mostly I'm just like, hey, and I just smile. And it's like this incredible opportunity, not to smile to make it nice, or I'll just look at them. But this is amazing opportunity to influence mm-hmm. because this portal has opened and I exist. I know I exist. They are like, whoa, what is that? Or who is that? How mm-hmm. is this possible? I'm blowing their minds just by being in the pool. What my experience is that when I look at folks and they're staring at me and I'm like, hi, they're like, ugh, and they check themselves, but I've just like blown their minds.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love not just the shock factor, but like the existing of existence. And I see your spirit and you're trying to figure me out. And of course you are. I am not what anybody grew up with, mostly, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, every once in a while, I will give some cut-eye across the pool because I'm like, as you been staring at me for 10
It's enough. And I'm
minutes.
Just trying to enjoy the pool with my kids.
Exactly.
So let's, can we get on with it?
Yeah. Like, yes, I'm real. I'm here. Ha ha. Hi. How are you? Woohoo. You know, let's have a parade and just play with your children.
Oh, move on, please. I love that explanation. And now we really do need to get into your children. How did the babies come about?
Love is love is love is love.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Love is love.
How did the kids come?
Yeah, so I always knew I wanted to have a baby. It's the only thing I ever knew I ever wanted to do. A lot of my career and stuff has kind of come upon me. And I was 32. I was in a relationship with my now ex, who's still my family. And I was like, I want a baby. I don't know if you want a baby, but I want a baby. So I'm going to be having a baby. And if you're having a baby, then you're having a baby with me.
This isn't the first time I've heard this story.
Yeah, right? Yes. Uh-huh. And she was like, huh, baby. Huh, okay. Yeah. At the beginning in my intro, I said we queered the queers, which I really feel like we did. So that first baby, my ex, or I'll say my co-parent, is Chinese. And so we were trying to, I knew I wanted to be pregnant. So we were, and she didn't want to be pregnant. So we're mm-hmm. trying to find sperm that was at least East Asian, hopefully Chinese. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but in Canada, it's hard to get sperm. It's hard to get any sperm that's not white sperm.
Yes.
There's like very low amount of folks who are racialized in the sperm banks, and you can't pay for sperm up here.
Right. So you were looking for somebody of at least East Asian or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
hopefully Chinese, maybe East Asian. So then I'll try and make this quick. So the kid who's now 22, him and I, when he was little.
Oh, this is the one you lived with.
The one I lived with, yeah.
Okay. I was like, wait, what? Okay.
Yeah, I know. Queering the queers. So him and I, when he was little, I would take him to daycare and we'd go to the coffee shop, and where the coffee shop was, the owner also had a kid around the same age. So we were like young. He was a friend of mine from the friend circle that I was in. And we would chat and blah, 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 blah. So then years later, I'm in the coffee shop one day and I've like struck a friendship with him now over the years. And I'm like, hi, pal. And he's Chinese. And I'm like, yeah, me and my co-parent or, you know, my partner are looking to make a baby. And I was not fishing. I was seriously chatting. And I was like, yeah, you need to get you and your Chinese friends, because we're friendly. I'm like, you need to get you and your Chinese friends to donate to the sperm pools because there's only white sperm out there. And he was like, oh, ha, ha, ga, fa, ga, fa. And we were like, ha, ha, ba, ba, whatever. Later that day or the next day, he messaged me on Facebook. I still have the message. And he said, I talked to my partner and basically I have what you need. So if you want to talk about it, let's talk.
Holy shit.
I know. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Is he queer?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, just, he's
not
straight.
That matters. I don't know why
four
that matters.
Boys.
To me.
Yeah.
Oh.
Four kids with a lovely human. And his wife was very close friends with a friend of mine. So we're like in a bit of community together, you know? And we had just seen each other over the years. And that was just what he said. And he happens to have the same last name as my co-parent.
Interesting.
I know. Well, and their parents, their dads have the same English name.
Oh.
And they have the same match of like, I think, yeah, mom is from Hong Kong and dad is from mainland China, I think.
Wow.
I embrace spirit in my life. And I really think the forces at work were like, here you go. Here is the sperm that fits.
Oh my God.
I got pregnant on the first try, which
wow.
is also, I know, which I'm like so grateful for because it can be
hard. How did you do it? You did it at home? Did you go to a clinic?
At home. He came over, did his thing into a Ziploc bag, and then
That's new.
A new Ziploc.
That's new though. That's the first, the Ziploc.
And then we put the semen into a syringe, you know, but without the needle, and then into me. We did that one day, then skipped a day, then did it a second day. And then a couple weeks later, I was pregnant.
Dang.
Yeah.
Congrats. Amazing.
Thanks. I know. It's really rare. And I'm so lucky.
And so you got yourself a known donor. Did you guys get any? I mean, it's Canada. It's not the States. And y'all are not as crazy as we are in the States with lawsuits and all the things. But did you do legal? Did you write up papers about what the relationship would be? How did you handle that whole?
We wrote up some paperwork. We had been advised in a queer family planning group that is put on by our queer health center. The lawyer who came into that group said that there is no legal anything, really. So like you could have a piece of paper, but you might go into a court of law and experience, you know, homophobia, heterosexism, and they might be like, whatever, this man is the father.
Right.
He should have a relationship with this child, blah, 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 blah. That's never happened. And yeah, it's just been fine. Just before the pandemic. So my oldest and him, they know each other through the world. I regularly check in with my oldest to see if he wants more of a relationship with them. The donor came over a few years ago, just before the pandemic started, and we played a game, and like we would see each other at the coffee shop. The coffee shop's around the corner from where I live. His partner knew, but he's also told his sons, and we've just kind of taken the lead of my oldest, and like I've just really checked in with him, and then like, do you want to know more? Do you want to know this? When my youngest, who's now, my oldest is 13, my youngest is 6. My youngest donor is a very good old friend of mine. And as that baby came to be, I would check in with my oldest and be like, okay, so you know, like the youngest donor is uncle him in our world. And so my oldest knows him as uncle. And I was like, I'm like, do you want more of a relationship with your donor? And he's like, oh, I don't know. He just made me. Like, like I know that this is how I was made. I don't know that I need to know more. And I think also because we have a cultural match in that my oldest is half Chinese, half Turkish and British, but his other parent is Chinese. And so he has a very like
and you're still co-parenting together.
Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. So we're like in each other's lives. His needs are met around culture. Mm-hmm. And not that that's the only thing the donor would offer, because I also have an experience, not of having a donor, but I didn't grow up with my father and I never got to know him. He died when I was young. And okay. So there is a, thanks, there is a lived experience of knowing that there's something about me that's different, that is about him and connected to Turkishness, and that I find now through food and music and through just meeting other Turkish people sometimes and stuff like that. But that I knew I wanted my kids to have, if we could, to have access to the person who contributed to their creation, much like I would, you know, God forbid, but like if my oldest's other mom died, I would want to have access to who she is, even though she's not biologically connected, you know, because she was part of who created him.
The parallel you just made to having access to your father and his culture, not just your father as the dad, but also your father as his culture and all of that being important. That really resonated with me somehow. I can't put my finger on what it is, but yeah, 100%. And so Cafe Guy, should we call him, is open to being
known. Yeah.
Known and in the life if wanted, or even in the future. Like it's all just, it's nice. Totally. It's working out beautifully. Yeah. That's amazing. That's great.
I feel like those were really blessings. And then I had some unfortunate things in my life happen after each of my kids were born. So after my oldest was born, 7 days after, when he was 7 days old, we found out my mom had terminal cancer.
Oh.
And then she lived for another 54 weeks. But wow, was that ever so hard? Yeah.
Yeah. My dad actually died from cancer 4 months after my youngest was born.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
It's a lot.
That's a doozy.
Yeah. And then my youngest was born, and 11 days later, my business was evicted. And it was like the downward spiral of business, and then a year of incredible stress, and then bankruptcy.
Oof.
So I have this kind of morbid joke that I'm really not going to have any more kids. It's like life apparently keeps happening, even when I have children.
Or maybe it makes the experience richer. It depends on how we look at this here.
Sure.
Yeah.
Totally.
No. Or just don't have any more kids. I get it. Listen, I see you. Oh, my God. Yeah. All right. Okay. So you find your known donor miraculously, like the heavens open up and here we go. And it works out well. And then your partner and you split.
Yeah. My mom's sick. She lives with us for a year. Me and my ex split about a year after that. So the kiddo is about two and a half. And then me and him move out, start doing, I think it was 60-40 at first. And then we got to 50-50. Me and my ex worked through a bunch of stuff, didn't work through other stuff, still working through a little bit of dynamics even now. Yeah, nothing like having a baby with someone to commit to them for life.
I'll tell you what. Wow.
That is a commitment. I mean, it doesn't have to be. And sometimes the best thing is to never talk to the other parent and just do a very like, here's the kid, I'll take the kid kind of situation.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
But that was not what I wanted. And there's pros and cons. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe we should have, like in both of my separations, there hasn't been a moment, you know, like if you have a really significant relationship and it ends and then you just don't talk to each other for a little while. Cause you got to shift the dynamics, you know, like you got to shift up how things go. That's not an option when you have kids.
Not when you have
with
kids.
Each other.
Yeah.
And so some of the dynamics of relating maintained for much longer than I would have chosen. And it took a lot of therapy on my part to start doing things differently and not like stay entrenched in attachment dynamics and whatnot.
That's a good point, because I know exactly what my wife and I would fight about if we were to break, like it wouldn't stop. That wouldn't end.
That's
I would still have the same anxiety over the same exact things.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't go away in the same way.
Oh God. Yeah, kids.
Yeah, so therapy. Thank you. Love therapists. I had a lovely lover in between there who's now one of my best friends because queer.
Yeah. That's a t-shirt.
Right?
Queer.
Now my best friends because queer. So then I met the mother of our second kiddo, and Yeah, just moved in kind of real quick and...
A little U-Haul situation.
A bit of a U-Haul situation. It was lovely. Oh my gosh, so romantic, so beautiful. It was like, wow, what a beautiful courtship. And without getting into all the details, it just started to struggle kind of about a year after we started moving together. But she always wanted a kid and I already had a kid and we just were meant to be in each other's lives to heal, I think, which included eventually breaking up. So my oldest was 6. He was 4 when we moved in together. Mm-hmm. When he was 5, my other co-parent was like, I really want to have a baby. And I was like, okay, let me think if I want to have another baby. And I just really consulted the stars, really, and was like, am I meant to parent another child? Mm-hmm. Like I had my old love child who's 22 now. I've got my now, you know, at that point, 5 or 6 year old. And I was like, am I meant to parent another being? And I really had to ask spirit because I was like, I cannot make this decision. I'll say yes. Like,
yeah, right.
I don't know exactly if that is the right choice. Like that, like me and my partner at the time were having a hard time. And one of my dearest friends was like, Lamia, you sure
right.
you want to go for this? Like, you guys aren't having the best time. And I was like, I don't know. So I consulted the stars and they said yes. And I was like, for real? And they were like, yes. I was like, okay, let's go.
I don't think I would be able to hear the stars. I would consult with the stars, but I wouldn't get, I don't know how to tune into that. I wish I could.
Yeah.
I don't think the stars would give me any answer except anxiety. And that would be all from me. So good for you.
Well, there's a part of, I've had a lot of dead people in my life and it doesn't always do this to everybody, but it certainly built a relationship for me with spirit and, you know, beyond the earthly realm. So
yeah,
there's a resource there for me.
I love that. I mean, I look to spirit. I talk to my dad all the time. I see signs, but they never give me answers. Just signs.
Just,
oh, there you are. Okay,
well,
thanks
it.
For showing up.
Yeah,
you got
yeah.
anything? You got any guidance? Like, that's my lot in life. Anyway.
Yeah. So it was a yes. And then it was like, okay, donor. Then
right.
we were trying to find like some kind of culturally connected, maybe a Turkish person, something, something. We couldn't find people, really wanted to have a known donor, wanted to try and, if it's not exactly the same, at least kind of give the kids a similar origin story
mm-hmm.
of like, there's a known donor, you know, you can have access to them because we felt it might be, I don't know, it's like complicated to be like, oh yeah, your older sibling knows their donor, but you don't
right.
get to know your donor, you mm-hmm. know, stuff like that. So we were trying
These are all the things. These are all the things that come with queer family building.
Totally.
Right? This is the stuff. This is the meat of it. The things we think about.
And in a like, you know, a world dominated by a lot of whiteness right now. Not that we didn't want to have white kids, because I mean, I'm mixed and I'm very much white passing and whiteness. Mm-hmm. I was raised British. And we wanted to not like erase her cultural and ethnic and racial reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't find anybody. So we asked a dear friend of mine who had already donated to one of my other very good friends, and they have
so
a kid.
Clear.
Who's so queer, who's also 13, who's the same age as my oldest
uh-huh.
and me. And that person is like one of my besties. And we were pregnant together and la, la, la. So now our
wow.
youngest has a dibbling who is a friend to my oldest.
Wow. Okay. I get it. I get it. I see. I followed
tree
it.
We got
yes.
Going on?
I got it. We need to draw it out, but
exactly.
Yeah.
I think for listeners and
that's
watchers,
amazing.
We're going to have to do
My mother's
picture.
Listening. Like, wait, what? I have to rewind that. But yeah, I get it. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, totally. So then he donated and again, and now this time, and I'm just going to plug Chinese medicine here. So my co-parent, my ex, but I guess co-parents, she thought she might not get pregnant right away based on some, you know, stuff, health stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as an acupuncturist, I do work with folks with fertility and over the years have seen that taking Chinese herbs can be really, really effective and even like quite a bit more effective than just acupuncture
mm-hmm.
or just supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to up our chances, she went to a herbalist for about 3 months, 3-4 months. And we also banked the donor's sperm. Because he doesn't live in town. And so he came in and did a whole like sperm donation through a sperm bank, and we banked it thinking, okay, we'll try a one-off live and then we'll have this banked sperm. And if we, you know, probably we'll need IUIs, maybe even IVF, and ta-da, we'll have it there. Mm-hmm. So we spent some money on that, but we got pregnant on first try.
What?
I know, which I really, the Chinese medicine practitioner was feeling my second co-parent's pulse, which is part of diagnosis. And she would look at her and be like, you need to try and get pregnant now. Like, you're ready.
You're ready.
Now is the time. Go for it.
You know, I took acupuncture in the end. It took me almost 3 years to get pregnant. I went through like crazy infertility. And in the end, I started acupuncture and my acupuncturist gave me herbs, but in pill form. Yeah. I tried the tea, like at the traditional. I couldn't swallow it. I couldn't drink it. The tea they gave me was just, I couldn't take
it. It's a strong taste. Ooh. Usually. Yeah, yeah.
But I took pills and I think finally in the end, it was that a combination of that and some other things that I attribute my pregnancy to my acupuncturist in many ways.
It's incredible. I've just seen it, like, I'm biased totally, but I've really just seen it over the years. I'm like, oh, people go to get herbs and they start to get pregnant. You like, it's just so powerful. I wish it was early on in the fertility experience because so many people spend so much money trying to get stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, fertility clinics, just bring an herbalist on so that you could try it for 3-4 months.
And an acupuncturist. Why is this not all holistically looked at? It's really totally. It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Take it all with a grain of salt. Like, I'm not telling it. I'm not an expert in any way, but yeah. I know what happened in my life and in my world. And
yeah.
In the end, acupuncture was the last thing I tried before I got pregnant. So
I say this to my clients. It's all a big piece of pie. I'm like true to my Turkish blood, you know, like Istanbul is the East Me Sweat city of the world. Mm-hmm. And as far as medicine goes, I am, let's all get together. Let's go have Turkish coffee and all talk to each other about our medicine systems.
Love me some Turkish coffee.
Right?
Yes.
Like that would be the best situation. And I think we're getting there. I want to get there.
But maybe in Canada. I don't know about the States. I don't know if we're getting there.
I think there's some, there's a lot of acupuncturists in the States.
That's
true.
It's very expensive though, because it's not paid for.
Yeah, except for community acupuncture, which I don't know if you've heard of.
I have. I had a friend who tried it to get pregnant, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's my extent of community acupuncture.
So then the children. So, wow, amazing. Like, really amazing. We got pregnant on the first try with a different uterus and different sperm.
I did want to ask you, how did you feel about being the non-bio parent this time? What was that?
Right? Because I have this, like, lived experience of all sides.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I wanted to mention the oldest love child is because moving into non-bio parenting, when I had the kid who came out of my body, I projected onto first co-parent, like, she had some hard times with connecting with him. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, I know you can connect with a little baby. I was not even a parent to this other baby. And he was calling me mom. Like, this isn't a thing. It isn't a thing. It isn't a thing. I was really dismissive. Truth. And then when we had second baby, mm-hmm. granted, there was stuff going on. Our business was evicted, blah, blah, blah. But I had a hard time connecting. And not mm-hmm. because I didn't love her. I mean, I certainly was going through a really hard mental health time. But I was like, oh, this is what my ex was talking about. Like, what is this? And it wasn't that I even, like, I think because I had the expectation of it not being a thing.
Right. Especially because you've already had the relationship you had with your love child, as you call it, right? Your first kiddo. So you weren't afraid. Going into it.
I wasn't afraid. No, I was also really struggling with my mental health. So that highly influenced the first couple of years.
I'm sure.
And me and my ex were fighting a lot. And so that was, it was so rough. And I think it was connected to my mental health.
But it was a thing.
In a big way. But it was a thing. It was a thing that I didn't expect. Because I expected, and I had dismissed my first co-parents experience. Which is rude. Oops. Now I'm like, sorry, that's real.
That's all right. We do that. That's what relationships are.
I understand it more now.
It's a thing. I always try to talk about it because I, too, have both experiences because my wife had her first. And I went through a great deal of a lot of stuff emotionally over during the pregnancy and then even mm-hmm. after she was born, being the non-bio parent, and how's that going to look and am I going to connect and all the things. So I think it's really important to talk about because it's a huge aspect, especially of queer families, because more often than not, there's one who's not going to be biologically related. Not every time, but more often than not. And it's just not talked about enough. And so you end up feeling like a crazy person because you're having all these insane feelings and there's no one to talk to about them because nobody else experiences them in your head, right?
There was a nuance in our experience, too, where I had had a child already, not just the love child, but I had had my oldest already. And then my second co-parent had come in when he was about three and we started to live together when he was four. There is a, what I call the first child, second child phenomenon, where she was on her first baby and I was on my second baby. And so places where like I was super anxious with my first baby about like going to sleep or all kinds of stuff. I just had second baby life and I was like, ah, that's nothing to worry about.
Right.
Oh, that like things that I'm like, oh yeah, I was so anxious about that. But actually that's not a thing. Like that's not a thing, you know, bless my first time round soul. Yeah, we would just struggle a bit because I would be like, oh, I want to flex my second baby skills now. Like,
right.
We can let her run. Like she's going to be okay. I want her to be more free. I want her to have like, you know, bless my really deeply bless my oldest kiddo, not the love child, but the my one from my body, because he got the brunt of all my anxiety. And we repair, like I want to write a book one day called Reparenting, because repair is where it's at.
Because we mess up a lot. It's true.
Oh yeah, we super do.
It's interesting though, because for me, it's not exactly the same situation because we made our first together. So we were both parents together. But I didn't have the anxiety when first was born that like Anne did.
Totally, right?
Right. Not as much. But Anne is just also not an anxious person. It's not like Anne being anxious, you'd never know Anne was anxious. Whereas with me, I'm like, that's how we balance each other out. I'm hyper anxious and we just like, you know. And when we had the second, she, of course, was just even keeled and like chill. And I think there's something to do with postpartum as well.
Totally.
That creates that anxiety. I was a hot freaking mess. And I still have residual anxiety over the second kid that I don't over the first.
And I think there's another piece of that pie is also like when the baby came out of my body, I was like, whoa, I didn't know that he was actually going to leave. Like this weird feeling of like, now he's out in the world and I can't protect him.
Yeah.
But when he's in my uterus, in my womb, I mean, I still ate too many chips and slayed up too late and like did stuff that you know.
So much ice cream.
Yeah. Like cereal. Stuff that I'm like, ooh, that's a lot of stress. And that's a lot of, you know, and I ate like veggie patties for 3 months because I was so nauseous. And the only thing I wanted to eat was veggie patties.
I could only eat cereal. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, hopefully this is okay. But like he left my body and I was like, oh my God, there's a part of me out in the world. Like literally my cells are running around. My voice raises in the face of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with the second kiddo, I don't have that like cellular kind of fear. And I've over the years, I've been like, is that second baby thing? Is that cellular? It's a mix of both.
What is it? Yeah. What? That's the thing. There needs to be studies done on this because this is a real aspect of our families. And then sometimes I worry, will my kids feel it? Will my kids feel the fact that I really do have way more anxiety over that one than I do over this one? I love them both.
Oh, like, yeah,
with
both your kids.
Every ounce of my being. But I have more anxiety over one of them. And is it because he came from my body? Is it because I still have residual postpartum? I don't know.
And the postpartum factor is real. Because my mom was dying a week after my kiddo was born, my doctor, she's a wonderful doctor, but I suspect that we miss postpartum in my experience because my life was a bit of a tragedy at the time. And then now I'm like, oh, I think I had horrible postpartum depression and anxiety.
I had no idea in the moment, but I am same. I definitely did.
Totally.
And I never got help for it. And so there's got to be some residual stuff in there.
And there's a funny thing too about, I've talked about this with other queer parents, but about queer parenting, the intentionality that goes behind it.
Yes. Thank you very much.
It's like, oh, we're not allowed to not have a good time because it's like, well, I wanted this baby.
We worked so hard.
Yeah. Worked so hard. did all these things to make it happen, especially when there's fertility stuff. It's like, you just got to be happy all the time. And if you're not happy, there's something wrong with you because, oh my God, you just worked so hard to make this happen. How could you not be elated? And it's like, postpartum is how I could not be elated.
And second kid, because that's just second hard. Kid,
totally. I know, right? It's a big deal, second kid.
Not to deter anyone from doing the second or the third or the fourth, whatever you want. However,
no, it's growth, though.
Oh, that's an adjustment. It still is. Every day, it's a thing.
And then for acupuncture, I will say, wherever you are, listeners, New York or wherever. I love New York, by the way, so much. Energetic medicine is a missing piece of our medicine system. And it's not missing because it's not there. It's missing because it's not understood. Mm-hmm. And I know, and I have just seen so many times now, I've been in practice for 22 years, over and over again, I'm like, oh, your energetic channels, the points of acupuncture go into points that are on channels. You can be treated by shiatsu, tai chi, herbs, acupuncture, qigong, food, meditation. All of those 8 branches to Chinese medicine. There's Ayurvedic medicine, which also works energetically, slightly different channels. It is happening, and it's happening whether we like it or not. So we don't just have a heartbeat. We don't just have skin. We don't just have environmental causes of, you know, poverty or toxins or whatever it is. We don't just have structural health. We also have energetic health, and we can take care of it in tons of different ways. And it is the missing piece, and it is a really powerful missing piece. And go get some acupuncture. And if you're afraid of needles, that's okay. Get shiatsu.
Now I want to go get a massage. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. Because when we take care of our energetic bodies, it's not separate. Like, we really do take care of the globe, because our energetic body is in this zone, but it is everything. And it's also all existence across space and time. No pressure, but maybe get some acupuncture.
I'm
going
to go get the acupuncture, and I might have to stop and get a massage. The only problem is, this stuff costs money, and then I have to explain it
at
like the end of the month. Like, oh, right. Yeah, that went to that random massage I got. But yeah.
Yeah. But if we think about it, right, like, I've worked in community medicine for all these years. Even before I did community acupuncture, I did sliding scale shiatsu. And like, I don't drink anymore, it's not about drinking. I'll drink again when I'm 85. But I used to spend tons of money on alcohol without thinking about it. I used to buy a pair of pants and be like, it's a deal, 2 for 1 or whatever, right? And then I'm like, if I transfer even like 25% of that into taking care of my energetic body, what happens? Also, there's like apps like FitOn with one of my favorite yoga facilitators, DeAndre Sinet, and that's free. Like, there's meditation websites that are free with incredible facilitators. Not that, you know, these things aren't for everybody, but there is something energetically that is for every person.
Yeah.
Because
agree.
We have an energetic body. So
yeah, I love that. And I agree with you. Everybody, go get yourself some energetic healing. I work out and I dance. That is something that does not ever stop. However, I do need to add acupuncture, because clearly something's off. And massage, because I just want massages. So
yeah, it's so beautiful. I'm so lucky to have a trade with one of the practitioners at the clinic I work at.
Yeah.
So I can get a massage a month, and then I give her acupuncture, and we just take care of each other. Yeah. It's so nice.
Oh, that's great.
And it is hard in the States. It's so expensive.
Everything is very expensive. This really has been so great, Lamia. Very
thanks,
excited.
Thanks, Jamie. I loved it.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week.
Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.